expeditions are buried deep by feeling the heart of the mind and of our way of doing things, our behavior, our standards. Keep them, fellows. We have them.
I'll tell you all about it.
The longer you live, and the more you think of your years of Swago, the more the word tradition of Swago is going to mean to you. And it's going to be something that you think about, something that's worthwhile, something that's fine,
Like submarines, got periscopes, like Ollie does. The rope-a-dope, I think your bad breath lady needs a bottle of scope, yo. We got to kick it.
It's like Norman Mailer needs an envelope. Like your fat ass mama needs some cantaloupe. Like Walter White needs an isotope.
We need to kick it. Like the NSA, likes to interlope. Like Billy Crystal, like the guys on soap. Like the mayor of San Diego, who likes to grope, yo. We like to kick it.
Like Nancy Reagan, likes a horoscope. Like Galileo, likes a telescope. Like Mrs. Willenda, likes my thick, tight rope.
We like to kick it. Like your pregnant little sister who's got to elope. Like your boy Buster Keaton needs a skinoscope. Like Dr. Marcus Welby needs a stethoscope. We need to kick it.
It's like the Cardinals, like to meet the Pope. And like the Democrats, like to vote for hope. Like cancers rock the Torah trope.
We like to kick it on the ski slope.
Kick it.
We are here. We are live. Where are we?
We are on the ski slope, the podcast dedicated to the love and memories of Camp Swago
and Swatona.
I thought you were giving me a high five.
I was giving you a high five. I was letting you do it to see if you actually had the line down. That was a half high five. It was a half. It was a two and a half.
I think I got a little bit of your outer knuckle there.
You know, you just have to touch. They did this study that
What's your thing on clinging glasses when there's a toast? Do you have to cling everybody's glass or are you just cool raising it?
I'm frustrated by the fact that everybody demands that you not only cling the glass, but look them straight, everyone straight in the eye.
Oh, I didn't know. Really? I haven't gotten to that extreme on the eye looking thing.
Yes.
But the clinging is...
Cindy is very much an advocate of that.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I was
a lot of people are.
I was into, listen, I just have to raise my glass. If you're at a big table with like 24 people, and it got
You can't cling in 24. There's got to be a point.
No, but people work for it. People are just insane about making the glasses cling. So
what do they do? Someone gets up and goes around to every single person? Because if they all start moving at once, you'll never know who clinged with who.
People get up from their chairs to cling.
Get the hell out of here.
Yes.
What kind of parties are these you're talking about? Is this a Thanksgiving with the big
family? I can't even name the party or the place. I'm speaking from recollection here, generally, not specifically. But I think, or maybe it's just my sort of perception that people take the clinging of the glass way too seriously, that they really work for it. But I've bought into it because I feel like the years where I was just raising my glasses, like, I don't think we really have to touch glasses. People were like,
It seems to me that one mutual raise of the glass
is good. That's a toast.
Exactly. Let's hold on for 1 second. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone.
This is Moin.
Hello. I should come in from break with the hello, this is Moin.
How's that wine?
It's pretty good.
Does it trouble you that you basically pay more than double the price just to drink wine at a restaurant? Like, you go to these restaurants and the opening price is $85, and it's the same bottle you're buying for $26. Or
if that's the situation, I'll generally get wine by the glass then.
Why do you feel that's a better value?
Yeah, sometimes it is.
Seem like it is, actually. When you go, three big glasses.
It's rare that Susan and I would finish a bottle of wine. I mean, it's doable, but...
It's rare that you two finish. It's three glasses. She's not a drinker.
She's not a big drinker, and she'll drink like three quarters of the first glass, and that's enough for her, and then the rest is left up to me. So, I mean, it's pretty close to being finished,
but never the full thing. Okay. No. I just get annoyed by it. It's the one thing that... And I always... Do you tip on the full bottle of wine?
You know what? I always say to myself, but I never do that. It's like when I'm not in the tipping situation, like I recollect that, like we're talking about now, and say I shouldn't do that. But then when I get there, I just do the easy.
You do it, right? You give just
20%. Do the easy math on the bill.
I just do 20% and then another dollar or two if I feel like I like them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm usually...
It is crazy,
I'm usually 18 and then round up to the 20 if I think it was good.
Okay, so you go through this rationale about like justifying prices of things, right?
Yeah.
So, like, every time I go on Seamless Web, which is, for those who don't know, an online ordering website. You could order from all the restaurants. There's one website. And it puts a price associated with the delivery. And as far as I'm concerned, if the food is $100 or $15, it should be the $3.50 delivery, whatever the price is, right? Whatever I feel is the right price, mm-hmm. right? But they try and make it variable against the cost of the food. And you could make the same argument, though, about the waiters. Why is the waiter doing anything different to serve you a $40 piece of steak versus a $20 piece of steak? And
right. Well, especially yet, the wine is probably the most expensive thing you're getting, and it's the easiest thing to bring.
Well, that's extending it even further. It's like, why is that something you don't tip on? Like, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of good rules here about what it is that you should be tipping on. And it's kind of arbitrary. There's not a lot of logic behind them all.
It is. But tipping, I think everyone's got that 15, 20% number in their head. So I think
I just go straight to 20%.
I do. Well, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's my thing.
I'll usually, okay, how do you calculate? What's your math?
My math is just 20% of the number.
So what do you do? If it's like 170, just take 17. So what I'll do is I'll make it, okay, take 10% and then double it.
I'm good at math.
Okay, so that's
I just see 20% when I look at
170. You don't do a calculation at all?
I see $34.
Really?
Yeah, I just see that.
Really? You just see it? There's no calculations?
Yeah, it just happens so fast. I go 170 times 0.2.
I'm divided by 10, 17, then just double
it. No, 170 times 0.2. That's what I do in my head, and I see that. It's 34.
Damn, that's pretty good, man. I don't do that. I'm doing
You're doing some I do that for...
I thought my process was good.
I do that, actually, for three numbers. I can do, 127 times 116. But it takes me a second to do it, but I do the same thing.
I need paper for that.
I do the first two together, and then I do the other one plus anyway.
All right.
I can do those in my head.
You can do three digits in your head?
If you gave me one, and within 30 seconds, I'd have it in my head, yeah.
See, I lose it. I'm carrying numbers over. I can't remember.
Yeah, no, I sort of can compartmentalize the one or whatever anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I just do the 0.2. I just see 0.2 times the number, and it's just doubling the number that's there. If it's 174, it's 34.8.
Yeah.
Right. Right, or 348 or whatever. Anyway.
It's funny. Wine generally, though, I think is a good value. Like when I go to a store and buy it, and I don't buy incredibly expensive wines.
What is your process for buying? Obviously, these ones you like, but when, let's say you're trying to explore,
mm-hmm.
do you do you do research or just what do you do?
No, I don't do any research. I taste it. I figure that's really the only research that's valid.
They give you a taste at every...
No. I mean,
I'll go buy something.
I just go. There's one store I go to in Port Chester, which is a town by me. And there's...
Oh, the good store there? Zaki's or whatever?
No. Oh. This is like BevMax.
Oh. This is like Wine King.
BevMax. But here's the deal with me is, I realized over time, because everyone, when you're in your 20s, it's like if you get red, you get a Cabernet. If you get white, you get a Chardonnay.
Right.
You do that for 15 years and really don't get anything else.
Right.
And, then you explore a little bit. And I've come to the conclusion the red wines, and I happen to like red more so than white, I like are Red Zinfandels, California Zinfandels, and blends from California.
Okay.
And I've come to this analysis on blends. I feel like if vintners who know what they're doing and you assume this is their passion, they're growing grapes, and they know what they're doing, they're going to make good blends. They're going to blend grapes that taste...
If you're choosing to combine things, you'd think they'd go after the combinations that would be
right,
the most
that are going to work.
Desirable.
Right. So it's like, okay, that's a good system for giving me a wine that's going to be, taste nice.
Right. Like if they didn't think they were going to be improving the wine, they would say, fuck it, I'm just going to use the one.
Right.
Right.
Right. So to me, it's like, okay, so I've gotten into those recently. And
doesn't matter what you're blending or do you have a particular
type? No, I just think if it's a red
table, mix it up, baby, whatever it is.
Give me what you got. And over the years, I've established there's eight or nine brands that I like or kinds of wines that I like. And then the other four bottles, I'll experiment and get four new ones that I haven't tried yet and see how those are. And I'll generally buy by the case. I'll go in
by there the case. So you find what you like and get a case.
Yeah.
I basically call up the people over at the liquor store and tell me to bring me the four. I'm on to one, I'll buy a couple of the ones I like.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll say, just bring me the two you think that are the best for under $20.
Okay.
I figure they're going to try and give me the best one. Why wouldn't they?
Right. They don't want to be disappointed.
Bad one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's proven out and showing me. And I usually tell them the type of wine, though.
And I think you can do that. I don't think you
By
have
the way,
to spend
I still do Cabernet. Sorry to be so pedestrian.
Oh, my God, people. How about Chardonnay? Still do Chardonnay?
I'm not a white wine drinker.
No.
But I never liked Chardonnay.
And you know what? I never liked it either. I mean, I did like it.
And I do like a wide range of red wines. It's not that I just do at certain times of year, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I like the full bodied of Cabernet. I just like that. So
mm-hmm.
I don't, I just go with Cabernets right now.
What is this I'm drinking now?
It's Cabernet.
Okay.
Is it okay? Or you want me to exchange? You want me to go mix it with something? Like
you got any Rosenblum Syrah?
I do have something else I can mix it
no,
with.
No, no, this is fine. It's good. It's
yeah,
very good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that's one of the ones under 20 that she says is a
all right. She, one of the preferred. Best values under 20?
Yes.
All right.
It got a 90 in whatever. You know how they put those tabs in there? Like, oh my God.
So funny.
Like, and you know what, though? You buy into that, though.
Well, yeah. Anything you can. I think it's always good to quantify things. People buy into the fact that there's a numbering system.
Of course
it's like,
they
oh,
do.
Well, this must be valid. It's a number.
Ratings? People love a rating.
It's so
and if
silly.
They think that the service that's rating it is, if they have any faith in the credibility of it, then it's like they believe it.
I know, but is there any other. This is what kills me about wine. It's like, is there any other food item or beverage or anything where, and maybe scotch, where there's yeah. this analysis of what you're consuming? You know, it's like,
right.
It's like I just like it.
Quite frankly, I'm the same way. Like, to me, I just enjoy it. Like, am I into the nuances of it? I'm really not.
Yeah.
I know I either like it or I don't.
Or I don't. And that's right. Really what's
it's
important.
Pretty much it's a binary thing for me.
Right, right. Not who the father
I don't really care. And I don't care if it's chocolatey and tanniny. I don't care that
but
much.
But I think, stuff. And maybe you're the same way as I am, I feel like in that way, like my sort of not needing to get into the minutiae of things, like with music, and we were talking about this before, like, you know, I've played guitar since I was in the fifth grade and had instruments, but I never was one of those guys. And most guys who do play instruments are like, hey, what model guitar is that? Hey, what kind of amp is that? I'm like,
I don't know. It's the one that works and sounds okay.
Yeah, right. It's like I don't really worry about that. You know, I don't worry about what amp is it. You know, I just want to create with it.
Right.
It's not about the name. But I feel like I should take
art. Should it not be that way?
It should.
That's how it should be.
Right. But even this past week, like, my bass was missing a back panel since like 2006, 2007.
Shocking.
And it needed new strings and it needed to be cleaned up. So this past week, I made it my point to sort of like focus in on the physical.
You know, you said that when you were at that jam session.
Right.
I overheard you say that.
Right. And I did it. And it feels great. It feels great to respect, in a way, the physicality of what's allowing you to create.
I have the same Ibanez acoustic guitar.
I loved it. You turned me on to
that. I've had from, what were we,
1985.
60, right? Like, how many years is that? 95? Oh, I can't do that as fast, though.
Really?
That's interesting.
That's not 29 years to you? Boom?
No. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
It is. Like, for some reason.
Addition. You're a multiplication guy.
I'm
huh?
better with multiplication than I am with addition like that. But I always have to do it with 13 and 2. 1987 and
really?
2013. How many years is that? 97.
Damn.
07.
That goes anyway. That respect you earned about 25 minutes ago.
Okay, listen, whatever. It's honesty, baby.
Shit.
So, yeah, I still have that. And you know what? I just realized, and I keep saying to myself, like, I'm going to do it as my own gift to myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I hint to Burke or something. You could do this. I was like, just go, like, go bring it over to a guitar shop and just clean the whole fucking thing up and make it perfect again.
$40, they'll
exactly. That guitar. I mean, I think I paid $600 way back when. It's probably,
oh, really?
That was a good guitar back in the day.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought
it was
that's
a good guitar. The one, well, I'm pointing.
I'm like,
it's
where?
In the other room.
Where is it?
But that's all I play. I've never expanded past that, which is a statement about, I think, to some extent what you were saying. I just like what it's doing. And
mm-hmm.
and I'm also not as active a musician where I feel like I need to start creating different sounds with all different types of things at this point. Mm-hmm. I have an electric guitar. I never take it out.
You have one here at the
pro? I do.
Oh,
I do, actually. Like one of those like bluesy kind of.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you've seen that one. Yeah. Remember, it's an Ibanez as well, of course.
Right.
I'm loyal. I'm a loyal brand to my brand.
I just bought an electric guitar. This past
what
week,
kind?
It is a Epiphany Les Paul Standard 2.
Yeah, mine's the same look as that, I think.
Okay, you know, yeah. But it's funny, I haven't had an electric guitar in years, you know, and same reason you did. It's like I have an acoustic and I have the plug-in for the acoustic,
mm-hmm,
so if
mm-hmm.
I wanted to put an amplifier to it, I'm good. And the truth is, like, you and I both are rhythm guitarists.
Playing uncrazy leads.
okay.
For me, right. At least, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to have leads, you know. I mean, they're nice sounding, I guess, at times, but... You know, and I don't mean leads like, you know, on top of a regular melody, but when
you mean
just
lead
when the song
that's part
breaks.
Of the right,
exactly. Like,
it's hard
I've
to
never
do that.
Enjoyed that.
It's hard to play that shit.
It's hard to play that stuff too, but I don't think I've ever been compelled to try and play that stuff.
You know what? I also learned that even most musicians, I mean, all right, there's those few people out there that have just the ear where they don't have to learn anything, they just hear it and they do it,
mm-hmm.
kind of like I am with multiplication.
Mm-hmm.
but I think probably most people. Like, even if you're decent, like a good guitarist, someone we know that might be a solid guitarist,
mm-hmm.
if they want to go learn the lead thing from something that's where it's the lead within the chords or whatever, They got to go fucking learn it and practice it. I don't think they're going to just pick it up in three seconds about how, where you're picking and all that. So, you know, I just think it's not natural to everybody, and it's completely not natural to me.
Yeah.
Do you find, I mean, this is for me, I just strum chords. That's, and I make up songs. You know, this is my musical capability. I
would give myself. That's a good musical capability to have.
Strum chords, I'm a C. Music coming up with, I think I'm a B.
Okay.
My music's a B.
You've got a good natural feel for what chord should be what.
But if you ask me to go play with, like, be part of the band for Steely Dan, I'd be like, what are you crazy? I can't keep up with that shit.
The other day where it's just, you know, Velvet Underground song or a three-chord, four-chord song. I'm not concerned about that.
That's fun, man. No, I guess I don't find that as fun as, for me, what I was actually going to be getting at is I'm more sporadic with when I play guitar. But for me, playing guitar is usually playing my own songs, making up songs, a few like Elvis classics I like to still do, and some Counting Crows, some shit that I've done over the years that I like and then play.
But a lot of it is just playing what you want,
trying to find my own chords, whatever. And I tend to do it when I'm either at a very good place in my life or at not as good a place.
Or I got the blues.
Although, when it's a good place, I tend to do it more when I'm just, you know, life's just good. It's not like you have to be, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I find that my mood affects my desire to play guitar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to express myself that way.
Yeah, it would make sense that your desire to produce art would happen on the pole ends of that, you know, is my life great or is my life bad? When you're in the middle, you're trying to, I guess.
Yeah, and just even more mood swinging. It's not even necessarily is my life great, is it? But, you know, just because... Where am I at mood wise? You know, like just in terms of everything. But
will you write upbeat songs when you're in a good mood and then ballads?
Good question.
See, I don't think that's the case. I think it's just it's
not that actually. I wouldn't say that just because I'm in a great place that I'm writing
life's great.
I'm writing inspirational metal. No, definitely not. So the other night I met up with you guys. I don't know if some of you people on the Swago site, on the Facebook page saw, you know, Popkin was promoting a jam, a Merrick/Swago jam. So kind of his home and his camp home, people mixing together. Yeah. So I stopped by, of course, see my man Moya. Yeah. He's right around the corner. And you enjoy that. I could tell that you truly get pleasure. And Moya plays bass in that in that band. Well, I guess in everything you're in now.
I'm basically the bass player. I consider myself a bass player now.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I felt like you were forced into the bass at
one
point.
That. I was. I mean, I wasn't forced into it. I was happy to be the bass player for Indecision, which is Eddie's band, in 1982. But it was only like, I think it was like April through June of 1982. And then I had to leave for college. So that was that. And they had to find a new bass player. But it's what kicked me off on the road to being a bass player. But I didn't really play it again until... like 87, 88.
You gotta believe that for younger people, teenagers, high school, beyond, you know, before, a little after, like being in a band has to be a very great experience, like just a great experience. And taking that one step further, if I ever get to this point, I'm pretty confident I will get to this point. But there are two times I've seen, there's the show Daryl's House, which we may have discussed, which I think is just cool. Like the idea, right? So that's a great show. He brings on
And I'd love to guests. Have that house with that studio.
Well,
right?
Having a place or even at least access to that studio. But I also remembered Adam Sandler was in a movie where he was a comedian, a big famous comedian. He learns he's dying, and then he learns he's not dying. And one of the things he did, he was this rich dude, was he would go just pay, you know, kick-ass studio musicians to come to his house.
And you just jam with them.
How much fucking fun would that be? I want to do that. Like, how great would that be to just go get world-class musicians to just tell me what you want to do it. I'll do it with you.
But we have enough people that are good enough now where we don't even need that.
I guess for me, I don't know.
Why would you want world-class musicians? You got, like, Eddie is more than capable. Pop can play drums, you know, like Ricky can play guitar. Maybe, it's like maybe, everyone's totally capable.
Okay, I guess maybe to some extent. And this may be part of it. When they're doing this, like let's at least say in the Adam Sandler movie, he was driving the music he wanted to play.
Oh, okay. So I get you.
I like it to be my experience.
Right, guys,
like,
we're going to play this next.
Right. The next one we're doing is Neil Young this. The next one we're going to do after that this. And then get those down and go do them. And the ones that I know that I can sing in my key and all that shit. Like, how much fun would that be?
That's fun. But I will come back and say I think it's quantitative, not qualitative. Because even a jam like that, you can come and say, hey, can we play Neil Young's blah, blah, blah. And
at my level, I would just with my confidence level. Here's my point. This is fun. I would not be confident doing it with that group, number one. Mm-hmm. But I would be confident with a bunch of world-class musicians because I was paying them, and I don't give a fuck because I'm paying them.
Right.
I would not be confident.
What if it was you, me, Eddie, and Steve?
Okay, that I would do.
Okay,
that I would do.
Well, that's...
Once there's another one of these, someone else involved, my confidence level in my music is so low, and I just would not be comfortable.
Okay.
It would have to be someone I really know and trust that, you know.
I get you.
It's like if you're doing ayahuasca, you need to be with that right shaman.
I understand.
I need the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. You need to be comfortable in your environment. Take that journey.
You know, with a basketball game, I'll go play with anybody.
Right.
You
know, whereas me, it's like, are you going to play point guard? And here's four guys that are pretty good and they don't know you.
Imagine if they put in four really good ball players.
Right.
And then you're the guy, the point guard, and you're the leader of it. It's like, if I fuck it up, I fuck up everything for everybody.
And I don't know these guys at all.
And you don't know these guys.
Right.
That's how I feel. Self-conscious where the guitarist is like, what's with this clown?
Right. And it's only downhill from there. It's only downhill.
Once your head goes, it degrades into a spiral of insecurity.
Right. No, it does. It says this is the wrong direction. Boost me back.
You know what's funny, though? It's like, I was talking to a friend of mine about this. It's like, if you just express confidence... If you just act confident, most people just buy it.
And you do too, I think, right? To a certain extent.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the most important thing is that you start to believe it. Because I feel like it's like, good things happen. Because even if it is at first this completely fake thing, you're still putting, someone's going to buy into it. Someone's just, recognizing your body language. And then you get a positive reaction from it. And you're like, wait, it works. It's all positive reinforcement.
Totally, totally. Hey, can we take a quick break? I have to go visit the...
I'm sorry, we cannot. We are on
the John
schedule. Well,
we're going to have Noodles Night In coming up soon. Excited for this. We'll be back in a moment.
What's up, man?
Yo, we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to talk with our boy Noodles soon.
Mr. Henry Knighton, for those of you who don't know his real name.
Somewhere we were sort of off air speaking about appreciating things and how I think, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. You're about to tell me about what, you just had, share your thoughts with me about.
Well, we were just talking about how sometimes you stress about things and it can be things that it can only end up in an ultimately positive outcome, but you still stress about it because you want to achieve as positive an outcome as possible. And then you look back a year, 2 years, and it's like, this was such a great time. I should have appreciated it more, And that's basically
it. You mean even being a color war leader sort of a thing, anything in life?
I think anything in life. You always look back and you always have this perspective of a future and a past, and in the past you regret because you should have appreciated certain things more. You shouldn't have worried about certain things as much as you did. So you feel like if you can go back now, knowing what happens, you'd be much more.
And the solution is to live in the now.
It is, because that's all there is.
I actually agree with that. This moment in time is all there is.
Not to get too crazy. We should do it on another podcast, though, because I'd love to talk about it. I think time is just fictional. I don't think time exists the way we think it exists. I think we measure time by distance, right? Everything that we conceive of as time is measured by, really, a distance. Like how many times the Earth revolves around the sun. How many times a clock dial turns. It's really the distance of what something's traveling. And it seems like that's an odd way to establish a whole new system called time, because it's just movement.
When I was at Brandeis, one of us in a sociology course, that was the question that the professor posed. Define what time means.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah. And I've not thought about that since you're saying it now. And I've never... And I don't even remember where that conversation went back in 1980, whatever.
Back in the old days.
But I know it didn't go where you just went.
That's right, man. A lot of technology in the last 30 years.
And when you say distance...
It's the only way we measure time is by distance.
By distance, I don't know...
A year is measured by how the Earth's rotation around the sun.
Increments, though. Is that distance? It's in increments we're measuring. units.
But units of what? Units of distance.
Is it
like
distance?
Like the way a clock is made, it's the distance to get that little notch one over.
Yeah. What if you don't look at it in terms of the physical output, but say, what was the time between when we spoke a minute ago and when we're speaking now? It's a clock traveling a distance, and right? Mm-hmm. But it's also consistent, and it's very difficult to actually define.
To say. Yeah. And other things, I feel like there's a measurable other quality to them other than the quality that you're judging it by, which in this case is distance.
It's a hard concept to grasp.
It is. But I think our concept of time, and I don't know what the correct answer is, but I just think we're so wrong about how the universe works.
Well,
time is one example where we just have this, we're brought up to look at a clock and think that there's a thing called time and it moves in this very linear fashion.
But you say distance, but that, you know, and you're making a visual almost of like a clock spinning around 60 seconds, but look at your LED display. That doesn't act that way. So what's the distance there? It's a measure. It's a units measure. It's like it has to do with something about the passage of moments. What is a moment?
But it's a unit of time. But that's based on, it's still based on distance.
What do you mean by distance? Let's take it out of a clock traveling, a hand traveling around.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's synchronized to that, right? It's supposed to be synced up with one that would be doing that. So it's really it's measuring what we've established as distance through that analog means. But it's converted that to like, well, here's how long it is. And it's almost, we've created a second. You know, we've created the concept of a second where I don't know if one really exists.
So you think the whole concept of time is built around man-made creations of things that have, and measuring the distance of those things?
Yes. I mean, I think, yes, for the most part, yeah.
I have to think more about that before I share any more detail.
Anybody wants to post on Camp Swago's Facebook page tomorrow about their concept of time, feel free to break it down for us.
Yeah,
here's another point about time.
Please,
okay,
tell me.
Okay, so if you think about something, here, let's think about Swago. It's picture being a ranger in Swago.
Okay.
Okay, now picture something that happened to you yesterday.
Okay.
Is there any quantitative difference in your mind to the memory that you had, the exertion of effort that it took to get to the memory from 35 years ago?
No, but there is a difference in terms of how I judge its distance from now.
Only, but would there be? If you just woke up now and you had to remember both things and you couldn't quite remember when they actually occurred, would there really be a distinction between your memory from 30 years ago and your memory from yesterday? If you didn't know when they actually happened, those memories would be...
Are you saying is one memory equal to another memory? Yes, but what you're remembering brings you to...
Here's my point.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you lift 40 pounds over your head, which is more than... 20 pounds. You need more effort. There's a different energy involved in achieving
it.
That.
To have a memory doesn't have any different effort.
It doesn't have any different effort.
But it doesn't change the time element of the memory.
It doesn't change the distance that the Earth's revolved around the sun. But it doesn't change time. It would seem to me like a memory from 35 years ago should be so much more difficult to bring to mind.
I don't understand why.
Because it's a longer time ago. It's more in the past.
I don't know if there's no correlation between that and how the mind works.
But there should be, if time is real. There should be, if it's further in the past, there should be, it should be more difficult.
No, it should be remembered as something further in the past. It should be qualified.
That's my point, is that it's qualified by the distance thing, by the years. It's 1970, whatever. But if you didn't know that,
I don't agree with you.
That's okay. I don't know if I agree
with you. No, I do think it has an automatic association with the like, they are the same. Obviously, having a memory is equal, although, I mean, they're not, because if you think about it, older memories are harder to in general, aren't they? You lose things over time, I would guess. That's not even relevant. Having the memory as a human being and how our brain works is one thing. But the content of that memory is a complete different thing. I think you have a phone call coming from
that
Mr.
is
Henry
my
Noodles Knight.
It's time. No, it's actually my alarm to call Noodles.
It's a very peaceful alarm. You wake to a very
everyone. Let's all go om. Ready?
Okay, a little more on my leg. Oh, you can go massage a little more firmly.
How are you feeling?
Oh, that's very good.
All right.
Oh, really? My hour's up already? Jesus, that was fast.
All right. Have a wonderful day. We'll be right back. All right, we're back.
We are. And I'm extremely excited that we have our next guest on the ski slope. Mwah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You don't mind introducing him?
I don't mind. It's an honor. Mr. Henry Noodles Nider.
That was exactly perfect. 5 seconds. Yeah, Noodles, count. You were always good. This even in the Apache Relay organization, when I had no doubt you were going to hit the 5 second mark on the nose.
It. Nailed it, yeah. Man! Like a shots in Senior A.
So Henry, what do people call you? Like I call you Noodles, and my first question for you is: did anyone outside of Swago and Swatona call you Noodles, or is that completely a Swago nickname for you?
It's a good question, right? So for the most part, obviously, it was a camp nickname. But over the course of time, your good friends know about your camp life.
Right, right.
So every now and again, somebody from, my school days would call me Noodles. Folks have learned over time. Like, I went to college with some guys that were Swagoites, and so they brought it up, and then others would hear about it, and so... it's mostly confined to the camp guys, but every now and again, and it always sounds good to me,
You like being called Noodles.
Everybody says, can I call you Noodles? Of course you can.
Who did you go to school with from camp? Who did you go to college with?
So, let's see, who was there? Scott Stein was there.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, Greg Zimmerman was at Emory with me.
Did you call him Stinger and Zim? Is that what Scott Stein was?
He was Stinger. He was Stinger, right? Yeah.
Stinger, Stinger was good. He was a good little point guard. And I don't remember what we called Greg, but those were a couple. There may have been some more, but there were a couple guys at Emory with me.
Nice. Well, what do people call Henry? I mean, are you a Hank?
It's so odd.
Henry,
like,
it's Henry. Some of the guys from high school called me Hank, but it's really Henry.
I'm rolling with Noodles for this show.
I know. It's when we first got back together, I think at the reunion I saw you, I'm like, I think I called you Henry at first, just out of common courtesy. But it's like it sounded so weird. Like I don't think of you as a Henry, And then
it makes no sense.
And the same thing with Rocky. Like Rocky's like I can't call him Kevin. Hey Kevin.
No, he's simply not Kevin.
No, it's not his name.
It's not gonna happen.
What was your first year at Swago Noodles?
1973.
Oh, so you were just you were early too, like me. I knew that too. It's like were you a middie the first year?
No, so I was a frosh. So I was in.
I was a middie in 72. I was a frosh, and in 73, I was a middie.
So I was with I think that might have been Henry Cash's last summer.
Okay.
So we were with him, and it was David Becker and David Allen and.
I must have been in that bunk then. How could I not have been in there with you? I had David Becker in my bunk. Henry Cash was like. He was like your grandfather as your group leader.
Oh, he would come out and he would bark the weather and tell you to put on your galoshes. He was a good man.
I think so too.
I think I have the bunk plaque. I know I have the bunk plaque. I'm gonna have to go back and look and see who else was in there.
But from 1973 bunk plaque.
And your dad went to Swago. David Allen was on here and he started talking about how David Allen's dad ran into your dad. And I guess they had both gone to Swago.
No, my dad didn't go to Swago. My mom went to Swatona.
Oh, okay.
And my uncle went to Swago.
Oh, okay. All right. And that's how you got there?
Exactly. So they knew Blumstein from way back, and I remember Dave coming to our house when I was a kid. And
did the slideshow.
Dave, you got the two-for-one deal on the night.
Showing us the postcards and the slideshow and all that.
The old carousel, that like... 360-degree spinning
wheel,
thing.
Yeah, for sure.
That's funny. I'd love to see if anybody ever videotaped that presentation, like in 1973, mm-hmm. and we could watch that now. That'd be great. So what was it like to have a twin sister who was like older than you at camp? Because you'd be a ranger, she'd be an inter.
Yeah, I don't remember too much about it. It was always kind of cool to have Zena over there, right?
Right.
You go over for brother-sister, and, looking back at camp, I guess I was probably less than successful with the women in general. So she was
don't
no
sell
help.
Yourself so short.
She was no help in that regard.
Wait, Zena and you are twins?
What's that?
You guys are twins?
Yeah.
I think I knew that, I guess.
You knew that.
Yeah, I must
have. Wait, are you kidding?
I guess I knew they were twins. Yeah. I thought they were a year apart. Now that I don't know.
No. Well, you know what? Because I think it goes back to the fact that if they're twins, they should be in parallel groups. But yeah, the girls, you know, the girl group they pair you with is your
brother and sister. Are you around? You know, your parents just work quickly and pounded you out quickly.
Those Nidans. Work it. And what was with the names? You're Henry and she's Zena. Like,
well, Henry's a very fairly creative. Common name. Henry's not that
atypical.
Well, no, I mean, Henry was a nothing name when I was a kid.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden it's popular.
Now it's good, yeah.
Henry Aaron? That's a name. Henry Aaron. Zena is a more unique name.
Yeah, Zena's a pretty unique name.
Yeah, she was named after my dad's father, whose name began with a Z.
So that's a tough letter to work with.
It is. Yeah. You don't want to call her Zelda. I don't think she's like
no,
that.
No, Zelda Knight.
Yeah, not very many choices.
No, definitely. So I didn't realize. So you were a year behind. But wait, what does that mean? Why are you saying that they were not synced up in years?
Well,
because Noodles and we were in the same group.
Well, he came up to our group. But
when did that happen? When did Noodles join in? When did you join into Howie and I's group?
I was going to say probably as an inter, right?
That's what I thought.
Okay. So you were with David Allen and Schachter and that crew and Russ for a long time.
Did you request for that to happen, or they just decided that you should be in the older group?
I don't think I requested it, but I remember when you guys were Ranger. I don't know how it worked.
That's intimidating, then, if you're not even requesting it now.
Somebody was ahead of us, and somehow, you know, maybe the camp got smaller one year or something.
I think it was your elbow jumper, my friend. They knew that you were going to contribute a year.
Bring this guy up.
That jumper from the elbow. Well, for those who, you know, our senior A basketball game is really a great story. I mean, both Howie, like the first couple of plays, comes down and contributes and hits some buckets, and then basically Noodles just nailing it from that elbow, from the elbow at the foul line elbow. Like, I don't know how many. You must have scored in the high 20s.
And I was in the middle, scrapping. And no three-point line. And if there had been like a three-point line, where would be?
Scrapping, doing my thing because I'm bigger than everyone, scoring in the middle. But we really, the three leaders, it was a great
It was over in like the first
allocation
12 minutes.
Of everybody contributing. It was awesome.
But then they started calling fouls on Allen, and they were able to get back in the game a little bit. But not really. They never really came back. I don't remember them closing the gap at all. I remember the game just being fun because we were winning the entire time.
Yeah. Share your thoughts.
Well, you know, it's funny, guys, right? So, you know, that was, after that, my basketball career went completely downhill.
That was the highlight.
That was the glory mark.
That was the pinnacle. And Alan, you know, you mentioned the statistics. It's not as if I've ever forgotten that I went 8 for 9 from the field.
Like you were making every single
Wait, I want to hear his stats. 8 for 9 from the field. What else? How many points total?
It was 8 for 9 from the field, 1 for 2 from the line for 17. I don't think I scored 17 points the rest of my life.
Wow.
After that game. But it was fantastic because, as I recall, first of all, it was good to beat Jake.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Knocked him down a peg or two. And then I think, as I recall, where we were at that point in time, that kind of got us even, you know, in color war overall. It was a bit of a tide turner, as I recall.
Yeah.
Noodles, you had that shot where you would do like the swan with your hand, kind of like Patrick Ewing, right?
Something like that, because I was weak.
You would accentuate.
It was a beautiful shot, though.
It was
a beautiful shot.
Kind of perfect form sort of shot, like mm-hmm. really set up perfectly with the full follow through.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pearl used to have the jump shot. You used to kick your legs up in the back, right?
You know, I did. I would say that didn't follow me for the rest of my basketball career. It didn't look so good when you got, you know, actually played it.
But Noodles, you were also good, like, at tennis. I remember you being good at baseball. You were, you know, overall good very good athlete. Yeah, which I guess was why you could move up.
I was all field, no hit though in baseball. Really?
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
Well,
what position did you play at Swago?
I started out at second base, and then ultimately I went to. I like the outfield, so I like shagging flies. So I think I ended up at center field.
I remember you as a good athlete. I remember Noodles as a
very good,
solid, good athlete. Always a top pick in pretty much any sport that we were part. Doing.
And don't take this badly, but almost like surprisingly so, because you were like a little guy, and it's like, oh, and you're cute. You was like, oh, this little cute guy. How good can he be? But then you were like, you were good. You were damn good.
You guys are kind. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was one of the, you know, I was able to compete, and it was just fun. I mean, back then, all the different things that we played, and whether it was inter-camp games or playing with, you know, playing at camp, it was just fun. It was just a good...
You know, it's an interesting point, because if you think about it, the quality level of sports at camps is so low that any schmo could think like they're really
you, can be a star.
Like, you could be a star athlete. It's like me going, we were talking about the playing music. It's like me going to play with a bunch of schmucks. You're like, oh, I'm the best guitar player, right, you know? Right. And it's kind of cool that like everyone could kind of be a bit of a hero. Right, and you're not going to go do it in high school necessarily.
No. And when else? And it's cool that you have an entire summer to sort of just play sports.
It's
I mean, not to be super competitive about it, but where else are you going to play baseball games every day or basketball games every day? You can't really gather around and get pickup games going like that. So,
hey, Noodles, were you at any point in your Swago career? Did they try and institute hardball instead of softball? I just remember a couple of experiences like that. Were you a part of that?
I don't specifically remember. I know if it was tried, it never took hold.
It never took hold.
Well,
it didn't take hold, but the couple times they'd try it, the problem was that nobody could pitch. And you were throwing a hard ball, and people would be hurt.
It was dangerous.
And I just remember a couple times to the Swago life where they tried to do it, and everyone's like, all right, that's it. Baseball's over. But, softball.
I have a fun memory of Noodles. We were doing barnstorming, and we had French Woods.
Yeah, French Woods, right.
And I don't know what it was, but we were sort of like, I guess it was the end of the barnstorming trip, and we had it. You know, it's like we're sleeping on floors, and nobody's in a good mood. And we're playing French Woods and softball, and the game was out of hand for some reason. I don't know if it was because they were beating us bad, or we were beating them bad, or it just was, nobody cared. And at some point in time, the game was so out of hand that Noodles just, I think he was playing, like, shortstop, got the ball. Yeah. And rather than sort of making a play on it, just took the ball and threw it into the woods.
And that was it.
The game was over. Right?
I don't remember. I mean,
you don't remember that?
That rebellious act, you don't remember?
The one thing that really impresses me about the ski slope, seriously, guys,
yeah,
is your memories. I honestly think I remember a lot of, what happened at camp. And when I hear you guys talk about the things, whether it's with the guests and what you bring up, I'm amazed at how much you remember.
Most of it for me is the guests. Like, if the guests weren't on, like, honestly, a few people, like Jake.
Jake's
guy's got a
ridiculous
memory like a fucking elephant. That guy remembers. Why did they even say that?
Anyway.
You can't believe all the stuff he remembers. I'm just shocked.
Well, even the name Wah. Like, I had no idea how the name came about, and he just broke it down.
Boom.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Everyone, Ed Burke, we're having, as you can imagine, a blast doing this. Hey, just out of curiosity, where are you calling in from? How come you're not actually here? How far away are you?
I live in Atlanta.
That would be a tough drive in.
So I can't believe you wouldn't fly up for this one.
It's a tough commute. Yeah.
Did you stay there after college?
I did. So I've been here for, 30 years. Yeah.
Nice. Well, we appreciate your kind words. We love, Howie and I just love doing this. Like, just this, even if the total sum of it was me and Howie right now talking to you with some mics in our face, like, just fooling ourselves.
Like, pretending to have a podcast. Oh, okay, we'll talk to Noodles.
Like, who cares? I don't care if this is all a fantasy and it's not even real. No one's listening, whatever. We enjoy talking to our friends. It's been great.
Well, as I told Howie, obviously you're short on guests to have asked me to come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, that's crazy.
People don't know who you are.
You guys are doing us a great service, and on the heels of the reunion a few years ago, and it's just amazing how many lives have been touched by this camp, and how it still lingers and sticks with everybody. I know it doesn't
pay,
and it's just a great thing you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Do you listen to podcasts in general?
Honestly, no. I mean,
so this is like the only one you might listen to?
Podcasts? No, not my thing. I'm too busy, but. You guys are really doing a good job.
Thanks. We're having a great time doing it. Where is Zena? Is she in what part of the world is she in?
She's in Southern California.
Oh, nice.
It's a nice part of the world.
I just talked to her before I got on the pipe here, and she sends her best to you guys.
Oh, awesome.
Send them right back. Yeah, we haven't had a female guest yet. That's a tonerite, but
we have a verbal commitment from Amy Lippman and Jill Bernstein Caspi. Is that how you pronounce it?
Hey, so I think you guys talked earlier about best athletes in Swago history. So,
okay.
I know we talked a little bit about that, but I was thinking before the call today, what about the best basketball guy?
Basketball player.
Best basketball player, obviously confined to our era, people that we might know.
I know who. I got my guy.
Who would I say is the best basketball player? Like during the time where we played.
Yeah, because obviously we don't have visibility into who came before us. But
right.
I have two names that came to my mind.
Well, I always thought of Jeff Schechter as being the smoothest player, kind of a 6-foot guard who was just could handle and shoot and drive. So right. I always thought of him. I personally thought, like, as a personal rival for a couple of years only, because he left camp, Andy Murstein, for me, was like a personal rival, and he was a pretty solid ball player.
The steam guy.
And then after that, I put myself at the top, just to be honest.
In all humility.
I'm being humble. Who do you think? Number one.
Who do you think, Nudes?
If you were going to build like a Kiyuma team, right, who do you start with? You know, so to me, it was either Schechter. I thought about Ruben Birnbaum, too.
Right. He was our ear. He was a solid guard, too, a big, thicker kind of.
But I always feel like he and Bobby Klausner were interchangeable. So they both lose a little.
I forgot about Klausner, too. You know, Schechter, I think, is the best. He was really good.
You know who else was really? Was Ricky Friedman. And Ricky was like, Ricky was intense.
Ricky's
like a nice guy, like in real life. But when, like, you wouldn't want to play sports against the guy. He had that like other level of intensity, you know.
Agreed.
You know, and I remember when Do you remember Harlem Wizards came to our camp, and Ernie Cobb was playing point guard for him. And this guy was like,
Ernie Cobb was for the Wizards.
He played for Boston College, I think, and got involved in a point shaving scandal.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
And Ricky picked him. Ricky like stole the ball from the guy and went down the court and scored. And the dude was pissed.
Not to digress.
Ricky remembers this.
My memory of the Harlem Wizards was getting on the court, and I had to jump against the guy, and he put his arm up, and he just smelled so bad. I was just afraid of what was about to come for the next hour.
Oh, no. That's intimidating. Anyway,
yeah, it was. You know.
I remember them. I think when we were Eagles, they came, and then they played their game, and then they did like a like exercises. What do they call it after?
Right, like drills.
Know? Drills.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, the laughing fun guys were, like, dead serious, like, you know.
And then you'd get Johnny Lieberbaum would go jump off someone's back and dunk.
Right? I remember that. I mean, I think it might have been Lieberbaum. Was it Lieberbaum or Linsky, I think, did something like that.
So, Noodles, now I don't want to digress from what you brought up. So, Klausner, Berman, I see those guys as definitely good, you know. Point Kraus. Well, Kraus was a little ahead of us. That guy could shoot, by the way. We got a chance to play with him, like post Swago in this, you know, league, an urban league here in the city. Guy can play basketball. He can shoot and handle the ball. He's a solid player.
Yep.
And he pisses off the competition because he doesn't shut the fuck up, and he just.
but he's good at it.
He's great at it. Yeah. So who else do you put? Who's your big people? How do you make the rest of the team?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about Jeff and Ruben. And Roy Herman was a bit before our time. I heard good things about him.
Yeah, I heard he was a good shooter.
About his skills.
I think of Scoreboard as a big man. He's someone he was definitely ahead of us. Yeah. We were younger. But I definitely think of him as like a true post-up kind of big man. Mm-hmm. Ed Burke mentioned a couple of other guys that I do remember. Well,
Brian Burke was supposed to be really good, too.
Yeah, he was, I think, you're a kid, you're 6'2", maybe, mm-hmm. and you're thick and you're strong and you're aggressive.
That goes a long way.
That goes a long way, it does. And that's what makes Noodles even more amazing. You're 5'6", 102 pounds, and you're making it happen.
Funny, by the way, just in case the crowd is curious, I do shave now. I have fully matured, and I'm 150 pounds now. So
that's nothing to brag about.
Yeah, exactly.
150. You're my half of me.
Are you 150?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice
and lean.
When's the last time you played basketball?
Probably 6 months ago.
Okay, so that's good. That's
a
good answer.
You know, I got back into it a little bit. There's a bunch of guys here in town that continue to play, and you know, you try and get to it as often as you can. And I love going out there. I still think I should be able to do the things I, you know, could do back when. Obviously, I can't, but.
What, go 8 for 9 from the field?
There, and the next day I can't walk.
We've talked about it on the podcast, but we had such an amazing time, particularly like me, David Feldman, Tim Brody contributed a few years, was active. We had this team where it was a Swago team, and I know Howie, a lot of people participated. It then kind of sort of morphed into half Swago and half other guys. But it was.
It was still called Swago.
It was still called Swago, and it was just a great. It was just a great experience to just keep doing that. And we've talked about this also, and maybe you heard or didn't hear, but David Feldman is by far. He was decent back in the day. I'm not knocking how he was in camp. I've never seen anyone improve at a sport.
Into
their late 40s to improve at a level like he has. He's an amazing. He is a solid basketball player, and he just can go the whole fucking 60 minutes. Anyway, it was just a fun experience to do with the camp guys.
No doubt about it.
Do you? I noticed that. Do you get up to New York at all? Like, are you around at all?
Yeah, every now and again for business. You know, my mom's still up in New Jersey, so every now and again I'm up there.
You know, I noticed on Facebook that you're from. I didn't know you're from West Orange or South Orange. I mean,
South Orange. Yeah.
Did you go to like Columbia High School?
I did.
Yeah, because you know it's always so weird. It's like you go on Facebook and you go look up like Noodles or somebody like that, mm-hmm. and then you see that they're also friends with. And
that's one of the cool things. Yeah, like, wait, like, how do you know this person?
Some girl, Kim Jacobs, who is, I'm not a friend of her. I think we're friends on Facebook, but I've known. But I saw. I guess she grew up with you. It's a childhood friend. But it's always so funny to see that. Like, just
how do you know her, Alan?
Through a mutual friend. Met her once or twice. You know, out and about, single people in New York a few years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, but it's just funny because you know, you like I always get a kick out of Facebook when you see somebody posting on like maybe Moab
you see
posts
somebody's
something,
name that you know,
and
then
some weird person posts on it, and I'm like, I know that person. Where are they posting from? But I, anyway, that's sort of what just led me.
She's interesting because you know we all grew up together, and you know, Hebrew school carpool. They didn't have any boys in the family, so I was the de facto son to her father. And
no, you were very close.
Yeah, my mom still works for her, you know, her father now.
Oh, I didn't even know that there was that level of association.
She's a good person.
Interesting you raised that name.
That's funny. That's funny. You know, I actually, for about a year, I lived with my son and my ex-wife in Maplewood, you know, and theoretically he would have gone to Columbia High School.
Absolutely.
You know, but we didn't stay, obviously. But it's a nice area. It's a very anyway. We don't need to get into a personal digression
it's not
there.
Not
but
Roslyn, but it's a nice area.
Listen, man.
You know what's funny, Roslyn? Howie's from Roslyn, and I always think of Roslyn a certain way.
Yeah,
like there's just this impression.
Not as
I've
Howie
had.
Town, hopefully. Right?
You know, I always think of like as Ten Briar Lane, where Howie lived. It was like by the Ten Briar Lane. Right?
It was Ten Briar Lane.
It was a nice, solid little community right by the high school. But then there were like the nice places where everyone else lived. And it was, but then I see like on, again, this whole Facebook thing, like you reassociate people with stuff. Then I go see, I think someone from Swatona. And she's like lives in Roslyn Heights or whatever in one of those sections.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny. I don't know. I'm just sort of rambling here. But it's just like how so circular everything is. It's like what you knew from the past, and now someone else is doing
comes,
it with this person.
Him.
Yeah, exactly.
All connected.
Are you guys both in the city?
I live, and we're podcasting here from 15th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. That is where the ski slope is. And I've been here basically, you know, since college. And Moat is up in Harrison, New York, up in Westchester.
You're up in Westchester.
I'm a Westcharian. Yes. Yes. I like it up there too. It's nice. Easy commute.
I was actually surprised to learn from Sue the other day that the only one in your family that wants to stay in Westchester is you.
Really?
Didn't she say that? She said we would all. I thought you were there. It wasn't outside of you were there. And she said the kids. I would go move to New York City. It's just Howie that doesn't want to move to Westchester.
No, you're right. I was like,
you really love it out.
I thought she was talking about moving to the country. I'm like, oh,
no, no, she was talking about
coming back to the city. Yeah, no, I don't. The city doesn't do it for me. I don't get it. I don't, you know. And everyone's like, "Well, there's so much to do. There's the concerts and the." Nah, come on. It seems like you're living in concrete. It would drive me crazy.
Disagree.
All right, listen.
Hey, I'm not sure how. I assume you guys have kids. I'm not sure how old they are. Did they go to camp?
Yeah, mine did. They didn't like. It's funny. It's a running thing here where we ask everybody, "Did your kids go to camp?" And everybody's kids went to camp, and
very few loved it.
They were like lukewarm about it.
My son went to Equinunk a couple years, and then he didn't like it at all. And then he went to like a kind of more a little more arts and other things, more diverse type of camp. Didn't even love that so much, but he did love teen tours. What about you, Noodles? Do you have any kids?
I do. I got two kids. I got a son who's 12, and my daughter's 10.
Are they at camp?
We adopted our kids from Russia.
Oh, nice! Good for you. And did you? Are they in camp? Do you think about that being in Atlanta, sending them up to the Northeast for camp? Is that even on your radar?
It's just a different environment down here. So they go away for a couple of weeks of summer, but it's not the same as you know an Equinunk or Oswego or you know anything like that. So it's really not part of what happens down here.
Well, the thing I'd tell you is, and sort of to the point Howie was making. Even if you were up here, I think you might find it wouldn't have happened the same way for them anyway. I don't know if the fact that you're sort of in a different area is affecting the end result anyway, because the kids, I mean, I don't know what it is, but I mean, it's not none. My nephew loves camp, loves Equinunk, and just like we did. I mean, he was a counselor there, but I don't hear as many of those stories. I hear they're fewer and further between.
Hey, Noodles, how'd you get the nickname Noodles? I have to bring Jake in.
1973.
All right.
First year,
counselor Nathan Birnbaum. Takes a look at my legs. And says, hey.
Say no more.
Yeah, that's it. So it was because of my skinny legs.
It's amazing how that took off and just stayed, though. You know, because
I don't know how or why it stuck, but I'm happy about it.
Yeah, no, it was a good nickname.
It is a solid nickname.
It is.
Anyone, if you ask anyone at Swago Noodles, they think of you.
Most people don't even know my real name.
And they wouldn't know what to use if they did. Like, Weed, we're your buddies from back then. I don't know. What am I supposed to call you other than Noodles?
See, like, even on the color war plaque, like, you should have gone up as at least Henry, and then, like, in the quotes, Noodles Nyden. Like, the fact that it's just Henry Nyden.
Did anybody ever get a nickname on the plaque?
I don't think so. Right? I don't think so. But, you know, yours should have been there.
So I have the plaque in my garage, right?
How did you get that? Where did you?
I get to see you guys every day.
What an honor!
I got the plaque. So my uncle, as I said, went to Swago. He was a leader back in the 50s, and when the camp was going down, he went up and took all the plaques.
All right.
Took all the plaques.
Wow, we thought we were such a renegades.
So I have our plaque, and then I have his plaque.
It's a cool thing to have, isn't it?
In my garage.
It's actually hanging there? You took nail and a hammer and put it up?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Will you do me a favor? Will you take a picture of that so we can post it on the podcast website page?
Please.
I will do that. And, you know, awesome. I think Howie asked me to do that once before, and I never did, but I will definitely
you
do
son
that.
Of a bitch.
My friend, you are on record now that you're doing it. So
you haven't been forgiven for the first time.
You're not just going to disappoint Howie this time. You'll be disappointing 257 listeners.
Don't disappoint you.
You never do. No, you never did. We were talking earlier, I don't know, about what a great team we were as leaders. Like, it was me, you, and Moi, like, had a good, you know, I was just, I kind of chuckle, and this is more laughing about myself, but I remember the night that we were doing the Apache Relay, and I'm like...
You were doing the Apache Relay?
Well, that's the point I'm going to make. It's like, no. I'm like, you guys do that. I'm just going to play. Just tell me what I have to do. I'll hit the 10 free throws. I'll win the Senior A basketball game. And I was lame, but you guys just took that over and made it happen.
But we lost the Apache.
We did, didn't we?
We did.
Do
we were
winning. Who led what songs during Sing?
I was the Razzers. No, I was the March.
I think I might have been the Raz guy.
Oh, I might have been
this
the alma mater.
Ridiculous.
I think I was the alma mater guy.
You were the alma mater.
I was the alma mater.
I think I was the March.
All right.
And I think Noodles was the... No, I think I was the Razzer and Noodles was the March.
I don't know. I can't
it's
remember.
It's kind of you fucking
know, there,
nuts.
There is some YouTube video out there.
Of us?
Of
the stand, right at the end?
Of that night, right. Of
the announcement.
Stand, and then Dave announcing the winner of Color War that year. It's out there. It's
really?
I think I've seen it. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I was quite... I did think it was our year, because I think I may have spoken to you about this at the reunion, but it looked like it was you up on a bench. So
It was. You're
okay.
Exactly right.
Okay.
I was able to see myself, of course, you know, the sweater, which I've seen long since lost for some reason.
Oh, have you?
I have, too.
Didn't quite fit very well at the time. But, it was cool to see that out there on YouTube
I sent my Color War sweater to the cleaners 2 weeks ago because it's been hanging in my closet, I guess, for like 15, 20 years, and I don't think it's gotten cleaned. And I sent it out, you know, and then so it comes back like in the plastic wrap, like on the hanger with the tissue paper inside of it.
It is the biggest. That is the biggest acrylic piece of shit ever.
but I feel so nice that it's now like it's nice and clean and it's wrapped. It's on the hanger. Like I'm not opening
I'm
it up for anything.
It's the full white thing with the green.
Do you have yours?
I do not. It's like the green cuffs and the green trim on the button-up part of it. And it's about the thickest fucking fake wool you could ever have in your life.
It's acrylic. It's 100% acrylic.
It's the thickest like yarn it's though, ever. It's like an inch thick, everything. They're like
it's
weaving.
Okay. It's the greatest piece of clothing I've ever owned, without
it's
a doubt.
It breathe during the summer, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a great
what
time to wear.
What do you think would happen, if you just like decided you're going to wear it for, as your sweater for the day, go walk around.
You know, it's
you
funny.
People would laugh at you.
No,
or like,
I will say, like before it went to the cleaners, because it's like, oh, I'm sending it. Let me put it on.
Okay.
So I put it on, looked in the mirror. I'm like, you know what? It's still not. I still wouldn't wear it, but it's more fashionable now than it's ever been.
You think so?
I do. I guess turning the corner to 50, my sense of fashion is really deteriorated. But
well, I'd like to post a picture of you with a sweater a little later on the site.
I'm not taking it out of the plastic. It's in perfect condition. Hey,
did you guys go to the Steve Popkin jam a few weeks back, whenever that was?
Well, there's been a couple, actually. We were talking about it before you came on. You know, like, Mwah was there, and he was at the second one that happened, like, Sunday, actually.
I think there's been three. I was at the first one, missed the second one, and went to the third one, which was this past Sunday.
I mean, honestly, were it not for Steve Popkin, I don't think I would have ever known about the Grateful Dead, Joe Jackson, or Elvis Costello.
Right? I mean, the guy has, like, turned more people onto music. The other day
on Twitter, I follow Steve Lillywhite, who was the guy who produced the first Psychedelic Furs album. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at Steve Lillywhite, I'm like, dude, tell me Psychedelic Furs' first album is not the best album, like, that you worked on. And he's like, ha ha. He responds, ha 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 ha. He goes, I don't rank the album. Like, I'm not going to get into
like
a ranking with my work. But it was kind of funny. Like
that he responded.
He totally responded. But he is, Steve Popkin is the reason most of us are into the music we're into. And, you know, just watching
him. And he's still.
I was watching him so to answer your question, Noodles, like, so about 5 or 6 or 7 people showed up at a jam. I think you and Popkin were the only Swago guys, though.
We were, yeah.
And I showed up just to hang out for a few minutes and go on. Steve is so passionate about it. Like, he's truly just, even just jamming with you and the guys and making sure that the jam flows.
He's producing it.
Flows right. He's producing the jam so that, hey, I see him whispering over, hey, take this from this into like, hey, Jude or whatever. It's the same thing. He just loves it so much.
Nah, it's great. It's great. It's good to have his gravity in a way, like make the jams happen. Because I don't think anybody else would sort of have the wherewithal to be like, I'm going to rent this place in Manhattan for 3 hours, 4 hours. Let me call everyone I know to get over there and do it. And, you know, it's great.
He does it. He pushes, he pumps, he gets you in. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time.
You play anything, Noodles? Are you going to come up for a jam?
You know, I do need to come up, guys. It's been a while.
We would love to see
the city, and it's time for me to do that. So as long as I have some notice, I'd love to go do it.
All right. Be great. Love to have you here on the slope. In person. I mean, the phone call is great, but to see the Noodles Man live, whole different thing. No,
how tall are you now?
It'd be great to see you guys for sure.
He's taller than me.
How tall are you, Noodles?
I am 5'8".
Oh, okay, so the same size.
And that's
without, you know, without heels or anything like that. So,
are you a professional? I view you as being a professional. Are you a lawyer or an accountant?
I'm a CPA.
Look at you, like psychic down.
That was good, right?
Coming to you from my Midtown Atlanta office. As we speak.
Are you on Peachtree Lane or Peachtree Road? Or
I am on Peachtree Street.
That's awesome. Right. So that's it with two questions. Right. Like, this is better than 20 questions.
We're like psychic.
Yeah,
welcome.
You can't go too wrong there.
No, with Peachtree, I know.
That's the only one I know, so that's what I throw out there.
I remember once.
Did you guys ever get down here?
I went there like 15, 16 years ago for business, and I remember going for a jog and thinking, okay, I just have to get back. This is what brings up the street thing. I have to get back to Peachtree. Not knowing that, like, every other road was Peachtree this, Peachtree that.
It is true.
And I got completely...
Manhattan grid at all. It's different.
Dude, I got completely lost. I went to, you know, a pretty bad part of town. I had a bottle thrown at me.
Really?
Yeah.
At your car, you mean? Or
no, I'm jogging in a bad part of town. Well, I got a bottle thrown at me.
Turned around.
I ran a little faster. You know, got a little gallop and was out of there. But yeah, ever since then, I was like, okay, I got to break down the peach trees. It's not just one peach tree.
This is variety.
Yeah, it's lane, avenue, street, road.
I landed at the airport, went to Home Depot, left Home Depot's offices, went to the airport and left.
I thought you went to Home Depot, the store.
No,
like,
I went
picked
to
up
the
some
corporate
lumber.
Offices. They're based
that was
down
it, huh?
That was
hey,
it.
You got to come down. It's a nice place, guys.
I hear it is from everyone. My nephew, who was a big Equinon kid, is there. He's at your alma mater, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think he's loving it. He's finished his first year. He's loving it.
It's funny. Whenever I picture Atlanta, I always picture it for some reason being like a little bit north of Florida, like on the Atlantic Ocean, you know? And
it's not on the ocean.
I know,
though.
It's
Atlanta's
not.
In Midland.
It's not. It's like dead center,
as
you could be.
In Atlanta.
I know.
What's the temperature there right now? Like, it's dead of winter here. What is it in Atlanta right now?
Yeah, well, right now it's probably in the 40s.
All right,
for example,
that's a fucking warm.
Mid-20s.
Well, I'm not going to go there if that's where I'm escaping for warm, because that sounds pretty sucky.
We got another guest from San Antonio coming on in a second. All right. Listen, Newts, I got to run, man, because I'm going to have to
call. Life calls.
Life calls, but, you know, got to get some summer in too, you know?
hey guys, listen. Thanks for inviting me. Really
thanks for coming on.
Up with you, and you guys are doing a great thing for us.
Awesome. We'd love to see you when you're in town. It has been a pleasure chatting with you, and totally love to see you when you come up here. And I'm gonna maybe find a way to get to Atlanta. Also, I'll definitely reach out.
That'd be great. I appreciate it,
guys. Take care, Noodles.
Later, Noodles.
Bye. Yeah,
bye.
Wow, that was fucking awesome talking to Noodles, wasn't it?
It was great.
We do have to end the show right now.
We do.
Great show. Good to see you. It's been about a month since
good
our
to
last
be back
one.
In business,
episode 17.
Coming at you.
The spaghetti episode.
No way. Bye.